Today's Issues continues on AFR.
And welcome back to this Thursday edition of Today's Issues. Fred Jackson sitting in for Tim and the gang today. And I neglected in the first hour to let you know that along with listening to us on radio here through our towers across the country, you can go to afa.net and listen to us through the app, but also on Facebook and YouTube. We are everywhere. All right. Joining me again is Ray Pritchard in Kansas City. Ray, welcome back.
Good to be back with you, Fred.
All righty. And Steve Jordahl joining us in this segment of the program from American Family News.
Thank you. If I'm a little out of breath, you'll have to forgive me. I was running around. I forgot where the studio was.
That's right. We're back in the big main studio. We have some of us have been down the hall about 40 feet or so. Practicing social distancing, and we still are to a certain extent.
Yeah.
We're keeping 6 feet apart or
at least
thereabouts.
If that's the number anymore, you know, that keeps changing.
You know, I mentioned, you know, our program can be seen on the various social media platforms out there like Facebook and YouTube. But the president is in the news today. One of the big stories coming out of Washington is that at some point today, the president is preparing to sign an executive order aimed at curbing liability protections for certain social media companies. Now, Stephen Ray, behind all of this is a dust-up the president is having with Twitter right now, because Twitter now has a policy they call fact-checking. And they're... what got them in trouble with the president, let me put it this way, they did some what they call fact-checking the other day on some things that he was saying. I forget what's the topic it had to do.
The topic that he was talking about was mail-in voting.
Mail-in voting.
Right.
And you know, that is a big topic right now about voter fraud, and Republicans at least very concerned about certain aspects of voter fraud. And so Twitter... has hired somebody to fact check the president. We talked a little bit about this yesterday. He's a guy by the name of Joel Roth, who some journalists have done some investigating. He really is a Trump hater, and has said Trump and his people around him compared them to Nazis. So that may be one reason why the president is a little suspect of all of this. But the president saying, you know, that Twitter ought to be standing back, let politicians have their say on their platforms and social media platforms without interfering. Now, one of the other aspects of this, as far as Twitter goes, they say they look at some other journalistic outlets to check what the president's saying against what the other media outlets are saying are the facts. And apparently one of the media outlets that Twitter is checking with is CNN.
Yeah.
So okay.
What could possibly go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong?
Right.
So, Steve, I just want to ask you, you've been doing some checking on this. So the president executive orders, just how far can the president go, and should he go with limiting what some people say free speech?
Well, I'm probably not there qualified to talk about should, but I have checked into how far he can go. First of all, let's just talk a little bit about what this executive order is reported to say. Some people have gotten drafts, and it's pretty much unanimously reported out there that what the president is going to do is he's going to seek to curb liability protections for social media companies. This is speaking to the platform versus publisher debate. Now, the social media companies have considered themselves, and in fact, by law, are considered platforms, meaning we will give you a blackboard that you can write on. What you write on it is your responsibility. We're not responsible for that. We just give you the infrastructure to put your message out there. That's a platform. A publisher, like if you publish a book, and if I published a book that told you how to rob a bank, and then someone bought that book and robbed a bank, I, as the publisher, might be liable or considered an accomplice in that crime. I'm responsible for the content on my, in this case, on the big social media. So
broadcasters are also responsible.
Yes, broadcasters are responsible. We can't put, we can't say seven ugly words on our air. We have a lot more that we don't say, but yes, we are responsible for the content. So President Trump is ostensibly going to, what he's done is he's asked the FCC and the Federal Trade Commission to study whether they can clamp down and switch this the big socials from platforms to publishers. I checked in with Abe Hamilton, our senior counsel, as to how much of this would be legal. This is what he wrote back. Ultimately, congressional action will be required. They should revisit the law granting big social media platform status in the first place, but he cannot unilaterally change the status of social media companies to publishers without congressional action. So he can ask for studies, which is what he's done. The other thing I saw that he may do through this executive order, and it's kind of more symbolic. I don't know how much money is involved, but he says he might withhold federal advertising dollars from
that he can do.
That he might be able to do. I don't know that it would be a big percentage of their income.
Yeah,
right.
But also, Ray, one of the things is we're in election season, and these platforms, broadcasters, make millions of dollars off of election campaign advertising. But the reality is, Ray, and I get your comments on this, I think most conservatives are aware that most in the mainstream media, and we talked about yesterday about this guy who's doing the fact-checking on Trump, they're anti-Trump.
Right. Well, that's the least you can say about Twitter, about Facebook, and about these other social media companies. They are not viewpoint neutral. Mm. The people who run Facebook lean to the left, hard left. The fellow Jack Dorsey who runs Twitter, he's on the left side of the political spectrum. So the notion that this is a value-free, neutral platform, that has been gone out the window for a long time. And we've been complaining about shadow banning and about conservatives being censored and all the rest. Now, they've taken it to a new level when they decide to fact-check the president because he's got a bully pulpit that he can use against him. And Steve, I wonder if that's not really the thing that's in play here. The president can't change the law, but he does have considerable power with his, 85 million Twitter followers to make a big difference in the public debate.
He's got a huge voice, and it's really frustrating the media because before social media, if you wanted to get your message out to the people, you had to go through the New York Times or CNN or Fox or whatever. Now you have 100 different outlets on social media, conservative outlets, Breitbart's and such, and you have Twitter and all these other apps that you can actually put your own voice and message out there and bypass the big media. And they really haven't been that impressed with being cut out of the loop, as it were.
I want to ask a follow up question, Steve. That the Twitter and Facebook would be heavily invested in not losing that platform versus publisher status, right? Because they are legally, they open up a whole level of legal liability if they are deemed publishers and not platforms,
it
right?
It could be very expensive for them. It could change the fundamental nature of social media. I do want to just interject one thing. The Facebook CEO, Mark Zuckerberg, has been the one voice. Now, I have no doubt that he's as left and liberal as they come in Silicon Valley, but he has said that the social media should not be in the business of policing content. And he has been willing on Facebook to allow a lot more leeway. Obviously, they're going to take down pornography. They're going to take down how to make a bomb and blow up your local post office or whatever. But they're not going to take down or challenge statements like Twitter has, for example. So that should be mentioned.
I'm waiting for Twitter, if they're going to go into the fact-checking business.
Right.
What are they going to do with Joe Biden? checking facts and some of the other Democrat operatives.
Well, Joe Biden, you might as well be checking Alice in Wonderland for him.
but the thing that bothered me the most about this particular story at this point is the fact that Twitter appoints this Yoel Roth to be their fact checker of the president. He donated to Hillary Clinton's campaign in 2016. I mean, he's clearly biased, not only against Trump, but Trump followers, some of the things that he has said. So So any kind of remarks from Twitter saying, you know, they're going to carry out this fairly, Ray, is just nonsense.
Oh, it's crazy. And for them to pick an issue like the issue of voter fraud, that is an ongoing political debate in America today. Mm-hmm. It ought to be solved in the arena of public controversy and ultimately at the ballot box. We don't need Twitter putting their thumb on the scale to lead people away from President Trump's viewpoint. There's a lot of other people talking about this. Get your thumb off the scales and let the debate go on.
Steve?
You know, on a related note, Twitter has hired somebody to be on their board at Twitter as an independent advisor, and her name mm-hmm. is Dr. Fei-Fei Li. She is a Stanford professor, former Google vice president. She is linked to the Chinese Communist Party. In fact, she's linked to the Chinese Communist Party's United Work Front Department. Basically, what the job of that agency and her in conjunction with that agency is, and I'm quoting here, to co-opt and neutralize sources of potential opposition to the policies and authority of the Chinese Communist Party. She's a spokesperson for the Chinese Communist Party. So what do you think Twitter is now going to say about, for example, the rumblings in Hong Kong?
Right.
Yes.
I mean, it just doesn't stop.
That's amazing. And you know, I am thankful that this information, we still have enough freedom in the media in this country that this information can get out there. And folks, right. So now you understand, if you're reading Twitter these days, and particularly political comments, that there is an agenda behind the people who are putting these kinds of things out there. So is it anyway, and I always go back to this, you know, the president, before becoming president, Donald Trump, talking about deep state. Certainly we've seen that manifested in the first 4 years in office. But the deep state goes beyond Democrats. It now goes, and I think that the major revelation that people need to understand, that for the most part, the mainstream news media, be it the platforms, the broadcasters, the New York Times, they don't like Donald Trump.
No, that's pretty universal.
And everything that they're producing is against Donald Trump. I've been in this business now for over 40 years. I have never seen the bias against a political leader, against a political party, that I have seen in the last 4 years.
I have a story running today on American Family News. You could probably see the written version at One News Now. A former CBS executive, president of CBS News back in the 80s, said, yeah, he admitted that the mainstream media does have a lot of bias, and what they should do is proudly embrace the bias, let people know that it's happening, and then move forward. Somehow he says that that's going to give some kind of balance and honesty to it. I don't know that that's going to happen, but his conclusion, and the guys that I talked to at Media Research Center agreed, mainstream media has passed the tipping point, is in their words. It's not coming back. You can't recover from the malpractice, journalistic malpractice that has been committed in the last 4 years, if not
earlier. We're going to see, as we roll through the summer and into the fall, we're going to see them go to new depths mm-hmm. of partisanship on the mainstream media. Wait till September. Wait till October, in the days leading up to the November election.
They're going to go apoplectic if President Trump wins again.
Yes. If we thought it was bad the first 4 years.
Right.
Man.
Just wait. All right, Steve, next story.
I wanted to run this, especially by Ray. This is some data coming out of the Barna Group. And what the Barna Group found was that nearly half of churchgoers have not watched an online service in the past 4 weeks. And among those who have, only 40% say they've been watching services from their regular home church. We've been touting the brilliance of churches of being able to adapt to this coronavirus and put their services online. And at least at the beginning, we were hearing reports of many, many more viewers than they ever had actual people in the sanctuaries before this pandemic. But now we're seeing that people are kind of getting tired of this, and they're not watching services online. Ray, I am a little afraid that this pandemic and shuttering churches is going to have some permanent effects on the church, the American church.
Number one, I want to say I believe the Barna survey is essentially correct. There are going to be outliers. There are going to be some churches that have grown significantly through this period. But I think by and large, for the American church, which is all we can talk about at this point, that for most American churches, there was a spike upward in the first few weeks.
Yes.
As more, and I mean, it was new, it was novel, it was different, and it was a, hey, let's all get in there, let's support the church. But as this thing has dragged on and on and on, I have been talking with pastors, been in communication, been reading just enough, ad hoc comments from around the country that basically the line, which there was a spike in the first few weeks, it's been a slow decline since then, which is one reason I think, Fred, churches are saying enough is enough is enough. We've got to open back up, which is why churches in California are going to, they're going to go public this Sunday. So many of them are. Church online is a wonderful secondary tool. We're glad we had it during this pandemic. It's no substitute for the people of God getting together face to face.
Another number from that study finds that 25% of churchgoers say they may stay home until a vaccine is found. Which,
oh, wow.
Which they may never go back.
Yeah, right.
No, that's amazing. And I think related to what you're saying, Steve and Ray, I have been alarmed at some jurisdictions, the way churches have been treated. Remember early on, you had the church in Mississippi.
Right.
Was holding the drive-in service.
Right.
And the cops come along and start ticketing people in the parking lot.
Yeah.
And then last Sunday in Chicago, the mayor of Chicago sends the police to a church that had a service on Sunday with only 45 people inside. And they were social distancing and following the rules and all that sort of thing. And the police say, no, you're still in violation, I think, of a governor's rule about not being in a room with more than 10 people.
You know, the odd thing about that is someone was mentioning that the whole congregation, everybody that was in that church, could have gone three blocks down the street to the local Walmart, held their service in the Walmart, including
in the Walmart,
singing and everything,
okay.
And no one would have said a thing.
Yeah.
Sure.
So, you know, what concerns me are, have we reached a point, Ray, and I'll get your comments on this, where authorities, certain authorities, now believe they can actually persecute Christians. We'll go after the Christians in this country. And we now believe that we won't face the kind of opposition we may have 10, 20 years ago. That we'll make an example of those churches.
I'm
concerned about that.
I think the last part of the statement is absolutely true. This mayor in Chicago knew she would not get in trouble.
Yeah.
She knew she could get away with it. You know, what is it? Power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely. And there are some people who have gone power mad. They have used the pandemic as an excuse to exercise their prejudice against, let's say, religious people in general, but Christians in particular. And this mayor in Chicago, that's a really egregious example. Why in the world would you send the police to break up a church meeting of 45 people unless you were motivated by animus or you just wanted to throw your weight around?
Well,
it's shocking.
The police in Chicago have nothing else to do. It's not like there's any murders going on.
Oh, right,
town.
Right. Nobody's getting shot up there. Nobody's being. There's no trouble in Chicago at all.
Yeah, this is the same mayor that we talked about. I think it was yesterday. The one that had threatened said that she had the power to bulldoze this same church if they didn't comply. And the same mayor who earlier had put a 9-block circumference around the church and forbidden parking on the street within 9 blocks of two churches in Chicago, even people who lived on those streets couldn't park on the streets without having their cars towed. Her whole point was trying to get Chicagoans mad at these churches.
Yeah. Guys, am I going too far here? And correct me if I'm wrong, but I've not heard these kinds of stories involving meetings at mosques or Hindu temples.
No.
Am I exaggerating in that?
I'm trying to think, Steve. I haven't heard a single story like that. Maybe the mosque have just stayed closed down. But we've not heard a single story like that anywhere.
The only story I've heard about a mosque lately is in Southern California. There's a mosque that is broadcasting their daily call to prayer, and people were complaining because it was too loud. Mm. So I don't know if that means they were... here's the one thing I think that is the salvation in this. This is most definitely going to get before the courts sooner rather than later, I'm sure, because there are several lawsuits in the works about this. Can you imagine if President Trump had not won the election and been able to cede the judiciary, the federal judiciary, with conservative constitutional judges? If we had had Hillary Clinton filling these posts, I have a lot more hope now that these judges are going to see reason and value the First Amendment and maybe push back against this legally than had the opposite, had we not had all these judges. I think God has really been gracious in that regard for us.
Right. And I think, too, you know, the pastors who want to reopen, they haven't been cavalier in their attitude.
No.
They
no.
are bending over backwards to follow the rules that have been put in place. They're trying to keep their congregation members safe, all of those kinds of things. So it's not like they're being rebellious and shaking their fist at the government. It's just that the governments in certain jurisdictions, and I have to say it mostly is in Democrat-controlled states, that are shaking their fist at pastors and churches.
Well, look, Fred, we're clearly on the backside of the coronavirus bell curve. Mm-hmm. The numbers are clearly coming down. I mean, everybody on both sides agrees on that. So things are getting better. It's still bad up in New York City and some other places, but by and large, we're on the downside of the curve. Pastors are saying it's time to get back together. But every pastor I know is bending over backwards in the area of social distancing, of separation, of no hugs, no handshakes, wear a mask if you need to, and we're going to scrub the church down from top to bottom. And most churches I know are not even having children's programs at all. It's just get together for public worship and we'll do the children's stuff a little later. So it's not as if pastors are being cavalier. It's the complete opposite. They're doing everything they can to protect their own people, but they have said it's time to get back together and worship God.
What pastor would possibly want to endanger his congregation? That's the exact opposite of their calling.
Mm. Right.
Hey, just before we go, I just wanted to, for those of you who are pining for sports, and I know there's a lot of you out there, I have to tell you, I was very encouraged by the latest headlines from our friends at the Babylon Bee, who have said that President Trump has offered to trade all of our communists with Hong Kong for all their democracy proponents. So, you know, a big trade coming down in the political area.
Send the commies to Hong Kong.
That's right.
I love the Babylon Bee. There's some great minds at work there.
For those who might not know, it's a satirical insight.
It
didn't really happen, but as much as we wish it may have.
But speaking of sports,
now
that you've got this Canuck in the chair here, I do want to celebrate the announcement this week that there are going to be NHL playoffs.
Hey.
Now, it may be occurring when it's 90 degrees outside in July, but 24 teams.
Hockey is hockey.
I don't want to one-up you, but NASCAR's been back for 3 weeks already.
College football is coming back,
there you
I
go.
Think. I
hope.
That's when you know the country is getting back to college football, I have to admit. Hey, listen, guys, thank you, Ray Pritchard. Kansas City, Steve.
My pleasure.
Sure appreciate, and always, folks, we appreciate you listening in each day. Pray that God blesses you and that you are a blessing to others today. Stand by for more great programming here on American Family Radio. See you again soon. Bye for now.